Blog Talk Radio.
It's gonna work, hey.
Let's get lost in a better place. Pick up the world, travel through time and space. So much to learn, so much to see. A chance to escape reality. Open your mind and your heart. Get a fresh new start. MJ Network will bring you there. So let's talk about it. Well, I and on the air.
Good morning, everyone. The sun is shining. You don't need a jacket. It's beautiful outside. And this is MJ Network. MJ stands for my sister, Marcia Joyce, whom I miss terribly, but her memory is there, and she keeps her spirit alive in MJ Network. And I am so excited. The show is going to be fantastic. Let's give you a little hint about what I'm going to talk about. The ending will shock you, and the truth behind ossuaries and the context will explain the deaths of so many, the reason why they need to be buried forever. And once again, author John Land creates a blockbuster novel filled with extensive research, excessive twists and turns, and a legend that comes full circle, but who at the end will be the one that's strong as steel. That's the last paragraph on my review that I posted today. And I would like to welcome the USA award-winning author and a lot of other awards for John Land. Hi.
Wow, Fran, I want to hear the rest of the review. Let's just read the review. Let's not do an interview. We'll just read it out loud to everybody, because that's going to tell them more than they're going to learn today listening to me. Who wants to listen to me? Let's listen to the review.
We could listen to this whole thing. I'll tell you, my first paragraph was like, oh, my God. I just sat down and just wrote this, and it just came. You know, sometimes it takes me a while just to come up with the first sentence of the review. But this one starts with several scenes all connected as the story begins with a devastating revelation with the contents of two crates taken on a freight train and the carnage left in the wake of the thefts. And the rest, guys, you got to read for yourself. So we're going to talk about one of my favorite characters, Caitlin Strong, and Court Wesley Masters. How did you create the prologue for this that set the stage? Tell us about 1959, because I read that part twice.
Well, you know, I had done a number of books in a row that dealt with really bad villains. I mean, I used the Russians. I used the Chinese. I used Islamic terrorists. I even used Nazis. So it was time to do something a little different. And for me, in the Caitlin Strong series, different was going back to my roots and writing a more traditional thriller. What do I mean by that? Well, the staple of the thriller genre is the MacGuffin, a term coined by Alfred Hitchcock, which refers to what everyone is after. What is it that's driving the action? In this book, the opening scene is a freighter crashes into a port in Istanbul because everyone on the ship is dead. What killed them? Years later, what was on board that ship, what killed all those people, is dug out of the Texas desert, where it was buried 25 years before. That is basically the classic thriller. I mean, and when I say that, there is one book, you can basically say the publication of this book resuscitated, brought back to life, rejuvenated, reinstituted, you name the RE word, it probably fits, brought the thriller genre back to life, and that was The Da Vinci Code, published over 12 or 13 years ago now. And it changed thriller fiction forever because it had a MacGuffin like what I'm describing, the MacGuffin of Strong as Steel. So that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to do a story that was more about a quest where all the characters were after the contents of that train car in the form of those three shipping crates that killed all those people in 1959.
That's scary. And then you move ahead to 1964. That wedding scared the daylights out of me, let me tell you. So how does this intertwine with what happened later? Because that wedding was like, oh, my God, that poor little girl was walking down the aisle, and then everything happened. That was horrible. Oh, my God.
Well, to me, creating the great fun I have in these books a lot of times is creating the villains. Because as you get more into the villains and you challenge yourself, you start thinking not just about why, what terrible things they're doing and what terrible things the villains are planning. You're thinking about how they became the people they are. What leads, are people born this way or are they made this way? Is someone born evil? And this, of course, was this was the whole theme of Richard III, you know, that one of the classic Shakespeare story. Was he a monster because of the way he was born or the way he was raised? Did he have a choice? Did he have free will? So I think to me that is a key quality of human nature. So meeting Luna Diaz Delgado for the first time when she's a little girl, witnessing the murder of her parents at their wedding because they had her, she was born before they got married. You'll find out more about that later. That comes to define her entire life because she's not really the villain of the story. She started out more as the villain, but she evolved into something different. And that's why I love writing by the seat of my pants. I love writing spontaneously. Because if I don't know where a character is going, you can't know where a character is going. And, of course, her relationship with Caitlin Strong and something they have in common – going back to 25 years when those shipping crates first surfaced in Texas. It really comes down, I think, in this book, and I haven't really thought about this before, but I'll say it now. The title is especially important. It's especially prescient because all these characters are strong as steel in different ways, and also they have their weaknesses that are different. And that's what defines them as characters.
Wait till you read the rest of my review, because I got that in the middle of it somewhere.
We'll get to that in the second half of the show.
Yeah, I did. I did right here. I was like, I'm so impressed with myself. I said, yeah, I know, I wrote that. I'm not going to read that part out, but I did. I got it. I said, yeah, okay. Not bad. So Jim Strong and Tepper are sent – in 1994 to the freight train, right? And they had the men left outside, and the train crew was killed, and two Mexican and three cars, and there was so much carnage. Why are these crates so important? And why would they steal them? That's so cool, though.
The fun thing about a MacGuffin is, for me, what you think makes it so dangerous, what you think makes it so world-changing, turns out to be something else entirely once you find out the truth. Because you could never, in a thriller, tell people what something might be and then have it turn out to be just that. You're playing a game with the reader. Can you outthink me? Can you outguess me? So the thing in 1994, the crates are stolen. They're on a freight train headed to Mexico. Well, talked about a major character in the book who we see witness the murder of her parents, several years in the past. Well, now we can start seeing the connection. The crates were headed to Mexico, where they were going to be possessed for one reason by Luna Diaz Delgado. But someone else, the real villains of the story, who want the crates, the contents of the crates, for something else entirely, intercept them on the way. Again, what you're trying to do in a mystery, it's all about whodunit. Everything revolves around who committed the murder eventually, and of course, what is the motive. In a thriller, it's not about who killed someone. It's about the mystery lies in something that needs to be uncovered. Something, a quest for this MacGuffin in this case. That's what makes Strong as Steel a classic thriller. because everybody is after the contents of those crates, but nobody really knows what's inside them, because that the deadly contents are not why, believe it or not, as deadly as those contents are, that caused all those deaths in Istanbul in 1959,
mm-hmm.
there's something else even, what's in there. The reason why people want to possess those crates has nothing to do initially with those deaths. So there's actually two different stories going on, and that's what makes it so much fun. Look, when you think of great classic literature, I won't say literature, but storytelling, think mm-hmm. about the quest for the Holy Grail. Think about those great Indiana Jones movies like Raiders of the Lost Ark. And there was also, of course, the Holy Grail there too, in the one with Sean, in the episode with Sean Connery, the installment with Sean Connery. They're great adventures, great thrillers, are about something that everybody else is trying to get, but nobody can find, and it's a race to who gets to it first, and that's what Strong as Steel centers around.
Well, the truth of the matter is that, you know how many books I read? Too many. The one thing about your books are they're not the same as anybody else. They're different, which makes it so much easier for me to read them, because lately everybody's been writing the same type of novel. Somebody is telling them, in the past, and then they're coming into the present, and like I said, so what? I don't care. A lot of them are just so the same that it's just like just another novel, just another day. And Caitlin Strongest, of course, is not the same. So Caitlin Strongest told, because they want to send her, to work for Bob Minnelli of the Texas Criminal Investigation Division to deliver a search warrant. And she's not happy because the end result is not good. Why did they send her there? I mean, She was not happy at all, and the end result was not great.
Well, she was there because the person who orchestrated the whole thing wanted to make sure everything was done. I mean, everything was done right, and everything was done safely. Little did Caitlin or anyone else know that when she was given that assignment, she was going to end up in a gunfight. Yep. And before you turn the pages in the book, the body count is a lot higher than the page count early on, because there's so many gunfights. There's so much going on in this story. We haven't even gotten to Venezuela yet in the opening, but that's important because that's a high tech firm, and something that high tech firm was doing is what led to the massacre that Caitlin Strong forestalled, saved some lives, but not enough. But then the mystery is, okay,
mm-hmm.
how does this massacre at a high-tech firm in Dallas, what does that have to do with those crates that went missing from a train car 25 years before? What does that massacre have to do with the hole in the desert that Caitlin will be in just a few chapters later, will find herself at wondering what was pulled out of that hole? I mean, obviously it was the shipping crates. The fun of a thriller
mm-hmm.
lies not in solving the crime. It lies in wondering how the big thing is going to be pulled off. The mystery is defined differently. If the fun of a thriller is trying to figure out how everything connects, and I don't realize what I do. I have such great respect for reviewers. Like you write very inclusive reviews. The review yesterday dropped from the AP, which was a lot shorter than the reviews you did, but in the AP has a paragraph in the review where it sums up all the things that I did and somehow managed to connect. And this is the thing, I don't even understand myself when I'm doing the writing, because it's like writing a book is like running a marathon. You can't see the finish line when you're at the first mile or the 10th mile or the 15th mile or the 23rd mile, but the finish line is there. You're going to get there. You just don't know exactly at what time, exactly how you're going to do it. And that's the fun of a book like Strong as Steel, because it's almost like a video game. It's a video game in your mind, because you're playing along with the characters and you're playing along with me. And here's the fun of a book like this. You have more information than any of the characters do as the reader, because you're seeing all their point of views. You know, the last time I was on, I think we talked about the Murder, She Wrote book, last book, you know, Manuscript for Murder. Will be I'm coming on again in May to talk about the next one there. But here's the difference. When I'm talking about the Murder, She Wrote books, I'm talking in first person. The books are written in first person, so I can't give all these different clues. You only see one perspective, and most mysteries are written from a single perspective, as opposed to thrillers, which are written from multiple perspectives. I know you have a lot of readers, a lot of writers who listen to your show.
Yeah.
So I think that's a great delineation of what makes a mystery and a thriller different. And a first-person book, obviously, from a third-person book.
It also depends on who's writing the first-person book, trust me. And the last couple of books I've been getting... You know, what drives me crazy is that when I get a book and it's written from 10 different points of view, and every chapter is somebody else, and then I have to say, oh, my God, no, why are you doing this to me? And I usually get it. You know that. But
it's not easy,
one point
is what you're saying.
Yeah, it's not easy. It's not easy sometimes, yeah. And speaking of video games, everyone, I just got a present from the publicist for Jeffrey Deaver, the Never Game, and it's based on a video game. And I think I'm reading it. He's got a new character called Ashore, and you want to read it because it's scary as anything. Somebody gets kidnapped, and somebody else is going to get kidnapped, and it's based on what they do to this person is based on a video game. That's all I'm going to say. So
what
you
a
never
great
know
idea.
My friend's going to. Yeah, it is. It's different. I've read part of it, but I'll get through. It's like 9,000 pages, but I'll get there. So, my other favorite character is Paz. Tell us how you created
him.
This. I love him too, and I love Guillermo. I love all of them. I like the ghost best. Tell us how you created the scene with Paz and Vargas and why they wanted to execute him, and I would have had a fit. And how did he take control to let them know, uh-uh? And can we bring in Quet Wesley, who's my other favorite guy? I love him too.
One of the staples of the thriller genre and the mystery genre to an extent is very often the second the foil characters, the second bananas, the henchman, the right hand man, becomes more interesting and more intriguing than the hero. I mean, this happened to Robert Parker when he created Hawk to go with Spencer, Cleet Purcell with Dave Robichaux and the Dave Robichaux series, Wynn. In the Myron Bolitar series with the great Harlan Coben, Joe Pike in the wonderful series featuring Elvis Cole in the Robert Craze books, the great he's just a wonderful mystery writer. Point I'm making is these guys are like Paz in the sense that they don't have as much screen time as the hero, but you can't wait for them. They dominate every scene they're in, and Paz. I created Paz to be because I wanted to create my own version of the Anton Chigurh Javier, but played by Javier Bardem in the movie version of No Country for Old Men. He was conceived to be a cold-blooded, maniacal killer, an assassin, and nothing more. But as I was just intimating, characters take over the story, and Paz dictated a different path for himself to me. Instead of killing Caitlin. Or after trying to kill Caitlin in the first book in the series, and he was supposed to die in that book. That was 10 books ago, because Strong as Steel is the 10th in the series. Paz becomes Caitlin's protector. He becomes her guardian angel, the person who shows up whenever she needs help when she needs help the most, Paz is always there. He's not even a character in some respects as much as a force of nature. You don't know where he comes from. You don't know where he goes afterwards. He exists as a creature within the moment of the story and constantly in search of spiritual enlightenment. And what I always do with these books is you have the 7-foot giant maniacal assassin, because he is a killer and he's a little crazy. But he's always searching for redemption, for a kind of spiritual enlightenment. And in this book, that spiritual enlightenment takes him to – that quest for spiritual enlightenment takes him to a daycare center. And you have this killer. And, you know, one of my favorite scenes in the book is when he gets back from Venezuela where he has been sentenced to die. They're going to hang him to death because there's a death sentence on his head in Venezuela where he was head of the secret police because he disobeyed an order to kill a lot of people. He wouldn't do it, and he could never go back home. But he had to go back home because his mother died, and he could not miss her funeral, even though he knew he was risking his own life by doing so. Because characters, especially the what defines the villain from the hero, the good from the good from evil, to me, is what is motive, what is driving you, what do you stand for? It means so much to Guillermo Paz that he had to go back to his mother's funeral that he's willing to die to do it. That defines the nature of his character. That encapsulates the nature of his character. Of course, that doesn't happen. And the other thing I did differently in this book to establish it as a more traditional thriller, as opposed to the last three or four in the series, I wanted to do it again. I wanted to, the theme of this interview is the same, only different. You know, the kind of the old movie phrase. But I wanted to open the book with more action. I wanted to have a book that had more gunfights, that had a more, and that's where we haven't gotten to the climax yet, but the climax is another version of the Alamo with drones and stuff like that, with the good guys inside again and the bad guys trying to kill them. So I really wanted to do something that would appeal to hardcore fans. It's the 10th book in the series, I write every book as if it's the first book the person picking it up has read in the series. So they're not familiar. I'm assuming many of the people listening to us today don't necessarily know the Caitlin Strong series, and they may want to start with the latest because it's probably, you know, I always tell people, start with the latest. If you like it, go backwards or start at the beginning from there. So the Caitlin Strong, I think this is a great book to start the Caitlin Strong series with. Because it does kind of reinvent the series a little bit because of the things we're talking about. It is a kind of new beginning. I think in that respect, many of this series has been trilogies. It's like I write, they're not really trilogies. It seems like each time I get through three, I've completed a cycle of some kind, maybe more of a thematic cycle. So I can take the characters in a different direction. That's the challenge of writing a series, Fran. How do you stay fresh after 10, 11 books? How is it there are 21 Jack Reacher books now, I think? I think it's 21. How is it it's still fresh as ever? You know, the James Bond series. You know, Hercule Poirot from Agatha Christie.
I love him.
Dirk Pitt from, you know, from Clive Cussler. How do these series stay fresh? And some would say the Clive Cussler example is a bad one, that Dirk Pitt has gotten a lot very tired as the books have gone on. And when a character gets tired, and I think this is a crucial point, when a character gets tired, it's because the author stops challenging them. The author stops making them work for what they're getting. The it becomes too easy for them. And when it becomes too easy, it becomes boring.
You're 100% right. And that's probably why. But I, you know something? Lee Child doesn't send me his books to review. And I ask for them. And
we have to change
publicist.
That.
Yeah, I don't know how I could do that because I send to the publicist. And you know what? Sometimes I get, where do you post your reviews? Everywhere. This is who I am. Look at my reviews. I mean, I didn't even have to ask twice for Jeffrey Deaver's book. And then the publicist said, I'm going to send you Stuart Woods. I said, go bring it on. That's perfectly fine if you don't mind waiting for a while. But, yeah,
heard was me sighing. Stuart Woods, I've read some of his books. I've read a lot of his books, in fact. And some of them were damn good.
I know.
But the problem is he stopped challenging his characters a long time ago. And it's amazing. I mean, you know, we could do a show about the treatment of women in, you know, in books, and you read the Stuart Woods book, and you think he just walked out of, you know, Harold Robbins called, and he wants his 1950 story back. You know,
I know
where is this coming from?
I know. Sometimes I read the book in an hour, and I could tell you how it's going to end. And I'm just wondering how come he has so much fun and doesn't have a problem afterwards, to be honest. It's like, oh, my God.
Talking about Stone Barrington, who's a good
character.
Yeah,
Stone Barrington.
But, you know, he was a better character when he was being challenged. He was a better character when he found out he had a son that he never knew about and how he struggles with being a father for the first time. That was a great book by Stuart Woods. But normally he's just jumping into bed with every woman that, you know, that he meets. And that's just not the way life is anymore today. I mean, people aren't like that anymore. And I'm the last person. Here's the thing about my characters in Strong as Steel and the whole series.
Yeah.
They may not always be credible, what they're doing and how they're acting and how they're responding, but they're always believable. You always know what they're why they're doing what they're doing, and you know, they allow you to suspend disbelief because you believe in them. You know, you want them to succeed. You're rooting for them. Because they're not the same people they were in the last book. They've evolved. They've changed. They're being faced and confronted with new challenges. And Strong as Steel, let's jump ahead a little bit, talking about challenges. Well, and I know you want to get to this. It's probably your next question. Court Wesley Masters, you know, who I know you love. I mean, Caitlin loves him. It's, you know, his sons are her surrogate kids in the books, in the series, right from the first book in the series. In this book, in Strong as Steel, Court Wesley Masters suffers one of those warning strokes. It's a TIA.
Yeah.
An invincible person in their late 40s, which is not uncommon. So all of a sudden, he goes from indestructible and invincible to vulnerable and wondering if he's ever going to be able to fire a gun with his right hand again. He has to do everything with his left because he's not sure. And that emotional quest, that emotional struggle, really defines his character. So it's one thing, and here's the way I'll leave this, and I know you probably want to explore it further. What I've learned in writing this series, and this is something I've never said before, I couldn't have said it until this book, it's one thing to be in a tree with a sniper rifle trying to save another man, in this case Guillermo Paz's life, who's about to be hung from a gallows in a military yard, a stockyard. You know, it's another to try to save someone's life when you can only use one arm because the other one has gone numb. That changes the entire nature of the scene. But it also changes the entire nature of the story. And in another respect, it shows the importance of the linkage between character development and plot, character development and story, because developing Court Wesley's character further, challenging him with this mini stroke, builds him in a different way and defines his character in this book. This was the same. This was comparable to what I did in the previous book in the series, Strong to the Bone, Caitlin Strong. We find out, the reader finds out for the first time that Caitlin was sexually assaulted as a younger woman 20 years before in college. That's the emotional core of the books. Now, giving something away, because I know we like to break some news on Fran Show on the MJ Network. In Strong from the Heart, which will be published a year from today, literally a year from today, the next one in the series, the crisis, the book is about the opioid crisis. And suffice it to say, without giving any spoilers, that someone very close to Caitlin and Court Wesley overdoses on opioids. It happens millions of times every year. 72,000 people died in 2017 as a result of that. So again, writer, to me, the best thrillers, the best books, period, are you, I am able to define I'm able to answer the question, what defines this book emotionally? What makes me care about these characters? It's what makes Harlan Coben an amazing writer. It's what makes Michael Connelly so damn good. Lisa Gardner, Lisa Scottolini, I just reviewed her latest book. you care about these people. You care about what they're going through. And when the book is finished, as if it's in the case of most of the books I just referenced or series, you can't wait for the next installment. You can't wait. That's my goal when you finish Strong as Steel. People can say, well, what do you want people to take from Strong as Steel? My answer is they turn to the last page of the book, they get to page 338, and they're ready to start the next one right in that moment. They don't want to wait a year.
Now I'm going to have to send to the publicist for Lisa Scottline because I don't have that one either. But you should see my chair. There's 25 books on my chair, literally. And David Putnam sent me three more that I didn't read. And I started to read Vanquish. It's fantastic. And then I got sidetracked because of most blog tour things that I have to do books for. What can I say? So let's go to a character that I didn't like her at the beginning, but I got to like her.
I know what you're going to say.
Yeah, I didn't like Luna at all until I got to know her and her relationship to Jim. And I was like, huh? And she and Caitlin developed this thing, so why does she want the crates back? I mean, seriously, I didn't like her at all. And then I didn't like the way she treated her grandson at all. I mean, I'm a strong character, and I'm a character altogether. So Isabella, you know, she's brave, and she, you know, lit the fire. She did all sorts of things. And I said, like, yeah, you go, girl. I don't know. So Luna Delgado doesn't believe in God, and she explains why does she want Isabella to burn down the church? I mean, seriously. Oh, my God. And she did.
You know,
kid.
That's a very – you just – when in doing that, that is a great question. Let me tell you why. She thinks she's doing her granddaughter a favor. That is an anointing. And notice that it happens in a church. But so when you think of anointing, you're thinking of a church, but she is not anointing her granddaughter with a blessing. She is anointing her granddaughter by burning the church down where her parents were murdered. So what Luna Diaz Delgado, and I just thought of something. I'm so glad we're talking because I think of things with you I'd never say to anybody else. Luna Diaz Delgado is classically a male character. In most thrillers, she would be a man, not a woman. But she's a woman in my world. She's a woman in this story. Because the story calls for it, but she is very empowered. She's a woman who's the most powerful crime boss in Mexico, and she sees her granddaughter as Isabella as her successor. She's finally found someone of her blood who can take over. Her grandson's just a little boy. He's not tough enough, and for her, there are three generations of strong women. No pun intended. On the southern side of the border in this book, you have Isabella, you have Luna Diaz Delgado, whose nickname is the Red Widow because of what she did when her own husband was murdered by the cartels, how she took her revenge. There's a great line I've seen, this is not original, so I didn't invent this. The most effectively it was ever done was in the great film The Usual Suspects, where the Verbal Kent character, played by Kevin Spacey, says the definition of power isn't about having more than everybody else. It's being willing to go farther than anyone else, to do something the other guy won't do. And I think that defines Luna. But that's normally a man. Kaiser Sose in The Usual Suspects is a man. So I happen to think, and this is the point I wanted to get to, I think when you look at the Me Too movement and the empowerment of women, to me, Luna Diaz Delgado, who is not really she's not an evil person. You know, she's not good. I mean, you get to know her in this book, and you get to know her and her relationship first with Jim Strong, Caitlin's father, and then with Caitlin herself, and, of course, building up to an amazing twist ending. You get to know her in a way because you understand why she's this way, because you witnessed that scene where she watched her parents being, you were there when her parents were murdered in the same church she burns down the first time we meet her. So there's a wonderful byplay there, a wonderful exchange. She's such a rich character because she can go in so many different ways. She's almost a little gray. You don't know which way she leans. And that's in contrast to Caitlin. And then this third strong female character in this story, who of course is one heck of a character in her own right.
I like her actually, but and there's another one. I know there's a third one here too, and I have that in my question over here. Okay, so there's much more to Luna and Caitlin, and then Luna is arrested. But why does Caitlin keep her alive? It's like, that's weird. And who is Nola? I didn't like her. Sorry.
I loved her. Well, first off, Caitlin is about justice. And there is a bond that forms between she and the Red Widow, Luna Diaz Delgado, in this initial interrogation scene in the prison where she's been taken. When Caitlin realizes that the prisoner transport that's come to pick her up is going to kill her. First off, Luna has some part of a story that Caitlin has to find the answer to. Luna has a locket that belonged to Caitlin's mother, who was murdered by Mexican drug dealers when Caitlin was only 4 years old. How did Luna Diaz Delgado get the locket that belonged to Caitlin's mother? So part of the reason why Caitlin saves her life is because it's the right thing to do. It's about justice.
Yeah.
It's about there are bad people, but there are worse people. And then there are really worse people. You never hit bottom when you're standing in quicksand. And that's the bottom line. So, but for Caitlin to find out how the Red Widow got that locket, she's going to have to save her life. So there's a little selfishness involved there. Because making a story personal, Fran, nothing is more important in making readers care about the story than giving the characters this crisis that they're trying to resolve. Giving them this mystery that they're trying to solve, but it has to be personal. It's about them. It's about something in their lives that matters. John D. McDonald, I think I've said this on your show before, was once asked, the great creator of Travis McGee, was once asked to define story, and he said, stuff happens to people we care about. Well, that's the essence of the Caitlin Strong series. We care about these people because the conflicts we watch them trying to overcome and deal with are personal conflicts, not just their emotional conflicts. They're not just about what they're trying to do. It's what they're learning on the way.
Well, they're real-life conflicts, too. So before I forget, watch out Thursday. David Burnsworth and his book comes out Thursday, Caught Up in It. You're going to want to read it. On the 29th, I'm doing something different. If you hear the introduction to my show, it was written by Trinity House Entertainment, Inc. Rachel and Michael will be here with their new song, Lord, I Love You. And when I listen to their music, I get to feel so much better. It's great. On the 30th, the story of the Plains Indians, Redfish Oak, George Putnam, and Jewel Gutman will be here at a special time at 11. And somebody, John, that you know and love, R.G. Belsky, on the 7th of May, Below the Fold. And it's a Claire Carlson novel, and it's fantastic. On the 16th, One Small Sacrifice, and on the 21st, somebody else that you know and love, D.P. Lyle, Sunshine State.
That's a great book.
Oh my God, is that hilarious? I love Jake, but I really like Nicole because she's just so like
me. When you get into books by guys like Doug Lyle and Dave Barry and Tim Dorsey and Carl Hiaasen, they're so great at using humor and actually getting you to laugh. I mean, I'm told, I love reading in reviews, and I think you've said it a few times, that there is times you actually laugh out loud at some of the stuff going on in my book. Some of the I think the reason why people love Guillermo Paz and Leroy Epps, the ghost character.
Yeah, I love him too.
The spiritual advisor to Court Wesley. They like him so much that their dialogue is so natural and rhythmical. It just feels like they're saying it. It doesn't feel like anyone wrote it. It's just so on point that they take on lives of their own, and they say things that are funny because they're natural. It's not forced. Guillermo Paz, when he's teaching when he's in that daycare center, telling the kids the story of, I want to tell you the stories of my mommy's funeral, that when I went home, I killed a lot of men. I mean, he does these things with these kids, and these kids ask these questions that 4- and 5-year-olds would really ask. And it's just, so I take it as a great compliment. Because it's one thing, and this is the point I wanted to get at. It's one thing to write a comic caper novel, which were, of course, the Donald Westlake, the Dortmunder series are the classic examples of the comic crime novel. You know, Elmore Leonard had characters like that. It's one thing when you're doing it, but when readers respond to your characters, when they laugh out loud at something that you didn't mean necessarily to be a joke, that shows that the characters are real to them. Because that's the way you are with people you like being around. You're comfortable. You're not afraid to laugh. Another one, I always make points on your show I never say anywhere else. I don't know why. I think one of the great, a mark of a great book, the mark of, I won't say great writer because I don't consider myself that, but the mark of a great book, one of the marks, is it can make you laugh without trying to. Because if it's making you laugh without trying to, you are embracing the characters, the fictional characters in the book, the same way you're embracing and enjoying the company of real people in fact, as opposed to fiction.
Well, what I really love is when I'm skipping, because I want to talk about Dylan and how he helps to figure this out and why Court Wesley didn't realize his son is a technical genius. But my favorite one is when Caitlin lets him know that she's got this and you had the stroke and don't even go there. I'm going to take you to the doctor. And she lets him know, I'm in charge. I said, yeah, I would do that too. That definitely, without a doubt. And I thought that was great. So why doesn't
And this is
Court
after she
realize,
notices something's wrong with his hand.
Yeah. I you know something, I won't say who, but somebody in my life a long time ago was sitting at my retirement party and he had a stroke. And I said,
oh my
I
God.
Think, actually, it was funny because it was my sister's ex-husband that I have nothing to say about anymore. And I'm saying to him, you know, you don't look right. Your arm is like numb and your leg is numb. And he said, no, it's nothing. I said, you know what? I'll be the one to call 911. And my sister looked at me and she said, what's wrong? I said, I think he's having a stroke. And I don't, you know, deal with him. I won't say why, but I did save his life. And I don't think he appreciates it. But, yeah, you just don't know. It's weird. And he didn't complain. But I thought about that as Court Wesley. And I said, Court Wesley, you better start listening to Caitlin. Otherwise, you're going to wind up, you know, want to know. So why doesn't he realize that I love Dylan? I love him. He really outshined everybody in this one, too. So how come he learned computers and languages and archaeology, and he was able to figure this out? And,
There's two answers to that question, and you know, if you always tell the truth, you never have to remember what you said. So here's why that happened. I got to a point where someone had to explain the contents of those shipping crates. These stone burial boxes. Someone had to explain it. Now, I don't have a character in the series with that kind of expertise, which means I was going to have to introduce a new character. And I said, you know what? It would be a lot more fun and meaningful to combine two things at once. Let's make Dylan, who's going back to Brown University the following week, where he's taken a year off. After some bad things happened to him. And he took a year off. Now he's going back. Well, it turns out we find that he's an archaeology major. One of my closest friends, one of my true mentors at Brown, was head of the archaeology department. So it's kind of a homage to the great Marfa Joukowsky as well. one of the most famous archaeologists in the world, who discovered Petra in Jordan. So let's make Dylan an archaeology major at Brown, which means he would have some expertise of ancient languages, in this case Aramaic, which is basically Hebrew. But there, and so he becomes the source of information for his father. That scene would have been so boring if it was a new character who just was a guy in a library or something. But the fact that it's Dylan allows me, and this goes back to the theme that I talked about a few minutes ago, the idea that a story is much more fun to read when you have a stake in the action and you care about the characters. The fact that Court Wesley doesn't know his son has this expertise makes that scene pop so well, because now it's not about one thing. Here's the point. The scene isn't accomplishing one thing by just exchanging information in a droll, drab, boring way. It's about exchanging information, learning information, but doing it in a way where, wow, my son is smart. Court Wesley didn't go to college. You know, he went right into the Army. You know, so that's a crucial moment, not only in this book, but in this series, because Court Wesley says, wow. And Court Wesley also didn't know, you know, Dad, I got a 4.0, or I've got a 3.8 or a 3.5. I am smart, you know, don't you? And the fact was, no, Court Wesley didn't, because he's got a younger son that he thought was the brains in the family, and Dylan got all the looks, and Luke got all the brains. You know, Dylan's like this rock star heartthrob. And it's kind of almost like Court Wesley was looking down on his own son, because he was judging his own son by his appearance. He didn't think he could be a great student at a school like Brown, but he is.
That's what I love about him, because he reminds me of what I
go through. We're talking
about
these characters like they're real people. That's what's so much fun about coming on your show. We're not talking about them like the characters in the book. And you know something? The people who are listening to the show and go out and pick up Strong as Steel,
that's
just
right.
Like, you know, when you know somebody, when you meet somebody for the first time and there's that connection, you've known them 10 seconds. You've known them 15 seconds. And there's a connection between you. And you can't define it. You can't explain it. It's like you've known them for 20 years. And you want to see them again as soon as you don't see them then. It's an amazing thing. It's one of the true gifts of being alive when you think about it. Well, one of the great gifts any book can give a reader is to make the reader feel the same way about the characters in the book that they feel about that person they have that immediate connection with. Your eyes meet someone and you just have this bond. And you feel it. It's like like intuition. You don't need to be told it. You can't describe it. You can't analyze it. All you know is that you really have this. And that's the thing. I want people, when they read these books, to form these connections with these characters. It's not just about Strong as Steel. It's about the other 9 books in the series and the next one that's coming out. I'm not trying to hook you on one book. I'm trying to hook you on 11, at least 10 right now. And that's why the characters and building them as real people is so important.
Well, I have a doctor, my dermatologist. I don't go to see him too often, but
thank
I
God.
Get emails sometimes. Thank God, please. He emails me and they'll call him and they'll say he needs reading material. So yesterday, I happened to be passing by and I said, Dr. M, do you need reading material? He said, make sure I get some next week. Your book is right there. He said, I read the John Land, you know, when am I getting the next one? I go, well, you have to wait for the interview. He wanted the one that I'm reading, that I'm doing on Monday. So fortunately, Redfish Oak, he's going to get that also. But, I have time for, like, a couple more questions. So we have I love Caitlin because she's like me. But what I really like is that Paz is very perceptive. That's a skill I learned from my grandmother. And why does Dylan fall prey to Selena, but there's Paz and Caitlin that takes care of that? Thank goodness, because, you know, blindsided by girls, not a good thing.
Well, I think that I know a lot of the questions you've asked me today have opened the door to some great questions. That one is pretty simple. She seduces him. Mm-hmm. And she uses her looks as a weapon. And Dylan is 22 years old, and he's an all-American Texas boy. And I think the way I describe her in the book, I mean, I'm obsessed. I'm obsessed with Nola Diaz, with Selena Escalante. I mean, I'm obsessed with her. You know, what I also wanted to do was create a foil. You see, this book often, you know, a lot of times in this book, it's Caitlin confronting men. It's Caitlin having scenes with men. The best scene in this book, to everyone listening, I'm giving it away. The best scene in this book is the scene where Selena Escalante and Caitlin go to the ladies' room together when they're out
that
to
was
dinner
the best.
With Court Wesley
that was the
and
best.
Dylan.
It's
such an amazing scene because, first off, Caitlin has never gone to the ladies' room with another woman. She's never done the classic thing where you ladies, you know, you get up and you go in pairs. Everything's in pairs. You know, you can't go. Nobody ever goes alone to the women, to the ladies' room. And people only go alone to the men's room. But it's that scene, because Caitlin knows something is off with this. This woman is not a pharmaceutical rep. She senses something about her as someone who's intuitive, but also as someone who's a lawman, lawwoman in this case. And that exchange they have in the ladies' room is so probing. And it's one of those scenes when you find out who Selena Escalante really is. Spoiler alert there. I'll stop. Go back. Here's the challenge. Go back and read that scene again after you know the truth, and you'll read it an entirely different way. It's kind of like watching a movie like The Sixth Sense a second time after you know the twist in the end. Mm-hmm. And you look at every scene you saw the first time and saw one way, and you look at that same scene an entirely different way. And this is why this series – you know, this is what's amazing about what we're talking about today is that it's one thing to have this kind of conversation about a new series or a second book or a third book in a series. Third book is usually the one that takes off if a series is going to take off. We're talking about the 10th book in a series that I'm still doing things I've not done to these characters before. So when you read Strong as Steel, this is why. This is why, more than any other reason, you can read the Caitlin Strong books in any order, because although they're sequential in many ways, the emotional challenges and struggles that the characters are being forced to overcome are different in all of the books, and that's what makes them so different and distinct and special. So, you know, Strong as Steel is the perfect one to start with.
Well, I've got a whole bunch more questions that we don't have time for, whatever.
We probably got to most of them in some way.
Well, sort of. There was one scene, of course, with are you well, let's talk about what's happening next. Are you bringing Luna back? And what about the man without the face, or Luna Delgado in the next one? And what about Nola and Dylan? Are they going to be part of the next one too? Because they should
absolutely
be. See how I got that?
I wasn't sure. There's absolutely no, yes. She has so the Selena Escalante character, who we find out his real name is Nola. She has an equally big, if not bigger, role in Strong from the Heart. So yes, you're going to see her again.
This is good. You know that I have had every one of your books, and in order to post your review today, which I did post with 7, and I'm going to post it later on Amazon with 17 stars, I never get to see the I just finally saw the cover go like, what? I didn't see that before. So I get it before, and I'm like, I don't even know what the cover looks
isn't
like.
Isn't it a great cover?
Yeah, wait till you see. I posted it on Facebook, everybody. It's there, so I hope. Let me look on my thing there. Yeah, it should be there. I hope. Yep, it is. It's on my Facebook page. I'm very careful what I post on Facebook. It's only my reviews or something else. I don't post very much of anything. And yeah, it's there. It better be there. And I did post it there. Yeah, Fran Lewis, yeah, whatever. And I'll post it again. And I'm going to post the buy links on my phone, on my thing also, because everybody has to know to buy the book. Otherwise, that won't be the point. So what is next? What we have, Strong to the Heart. And then let's give us another couple of minutes about Murder in Red. That's May 28th. That is Jessica.
Wow,
a
teaser,
back
a preview.
Again.
You know,
I love
easy,
that book.
Easy segue. One of the when I took over the Murder, She Wrote series, writing as Jessica Fletcher, I had never done any. You know, I accepted the job immediately, having no idea if I was capable of doing it. And I think the thing that makes it not no writing is a snap, but Jessica is entirely different in so many ways than Caitlin is, and yet Jessica Fletcher is so much the same as Caitlin in other ways. So in Murder in Red, she takes on, it's a mystery set with a backdrop of the healthcare industry, a sinister private hospital, and it's somehow involving skullduggerous clinical trials for drugs. And there are so many twists and turns. The best thing I can say about Murder in Red is to quote a line from a review of my last one of the series, Manuscript for Murder, which is basically, it coined a phrase that I've created the cozy thriller. And if you want to know what a cozy thriller is, don't read Strong as Steel, and that is not a cozy thriller. And
that's right.
My Jessica Fletcher books are cozy thrillers in the sense that there are no gunfights and there are no this and there's no that. But the intrigue, it's such a challenge to write first person from one character's vantage point entirely, and also a challenge to write books where there's not a lot. You can't always cut. When things start to slow down, you can't just throw in a gunfight. So in some respect, it's harder and more challenging. But for some reason, it's great because it's so different. I'm not repeating myself, and I think that's a very important point about doing these two series. And they're not the only two series that I do, but these two series are so distinct. It makes them each. It's not even the same process to write these two different series. So it's not the same, only different from Caitlin Strong to Jessica Fletcher. It's two totally different stories.
I just want you to know
stories.
That I just reposted the review on Facebook, and 5 people have already commented about it on my review site. It's like in 10 seconds they're reading it. It's like, okay.
Well, they're intrigued to see if you give anything away that we haven't in the interview. We've hinted at a few things. We've hinted at some big stuff in this book, because the only thing about giving away twists in my books, you might figure out one, but there's another 15 waiting.
They're not
right
figure
to the
it
end
from
of this
I
book,
wrote.
When Caitlin, when there's actually a twist ending in this book that nobody will see coming.
That's right.
Actually, one person did, which was amazing to me, because I didn't decide it until the last 5 minutes I was running. I went, oh, I just figured something out, and that's often the way it happens in the Caitlin Strong.
I won't tell anybody if I figured it out, because everybody knows me by now. I'm not going to say a word, but the ending is like, whoa, you have to read this. It's really scary. And
it's also very heartfelt, you know,
yeah,
they
I know,
to,
it is. It is. That last paragraph, the epilogue, it says it all. And I'm saying like, oh, okay, I got it. But Paz is going to come back, and Dylan's coming back, and everybody's coming back, and I can't wait to get it. And just tell everybody, where can everybody learn more about all the series? And I'm still waiting for the other one to come back, but he's not going to. I know, it's so sad.
I would, I think that you could go. I always tell people I would go on Amazon in the next couple of days, and I'd read what other people are saying about Strong as Steel.
Mm-hmm.
I would Google Strong as Steel. I mean, if you go to my website, you're going to see stuff that I want you to see. But I think you need to see stuff that's out there that's objective. If you're wondering whether it's for you, you know, check out what other people are saying about it. But don't read too many reviews, because each of them are going to give more away, and you don't want to know going in the twists, because there's so many in this book, and some of them, a couple of them are jaw-dropping, as far as, and it's kind of like, can you figure it out? When you go to see a movie like The Sixth Sense or The Usual Suspects, you know you're being conned. You know your brain is being toyed with. You're sitting there trying to see what it is that you're missing, and nobody does. You end up getting fooled like everybody else, even though all the clues were there. And that's what I'm hoping happens for people who read Strong as Steel.
Well, you're doing the blog tour with Partners in Crime, and I've done a few with them also. They're phenomenal. So some of your reviews are coming out today, and mine is out today. And I'm sure Cheryl apologizes for not being there, but she had an unfortunate death in the death that she had to go to. And it's also Thursday. Her husband has to go to one also. So she was really sorry. But I'm going to send her the link, and I'm going to send you the link for the show so that everybody could listen. And, yeah, this is oh, my gosh, everybody's reading this. I can't even take a chance to post anything. Everybody's reading what I'm writing, which is really good. But I want to thank you so much.
I love that because they're reading what I kind of wrote, too.
Yeah, they do, and they're reading my reviews, I think, and I hope I wrote a good one. I mean, it's straightforward, to the point, and no spoilers. I try not to put spoilers in. And I'm excited, and I can't wait to do the one on Jessica Fletcher, because you know I love Jessica Fletcher. But I love the fact, like I said before, that she's not the same Jessica Fletcher from before. She's different. And she knows how to use a laptop, a computer. And she even knows how to use a cell phone, which is amazing. So, everyone, have a great day. It's beautiful outside. I don't know how it is where you are, but it's gorgeous here. And the fun part is that I don't need a jacket. It's 66 degrees. The sun is shining. And who knows what's going to be tomorrow. So I hope
finally.
I get to see
finally.
You. I hope I get to see you at the Thriller Fest in July, and I'm looking forward to May 28th. I want everybody to have a great day. John, thank you a million times. Everybody have a great day, and bye.